Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill, and I'm delighted again to be able to speak to CEO Steve McQuillan and CFO Stephen King of Avingtrans, a leading engineering firm supplying niche products and services to the nuclear, healthcare, energy, medical, and transport sectors. So welcome, gents.
Hi, Paul. Good to see you again.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. That was a big build-up.
Yeah, no, sorry about that. Anyway, congrats on the strong and slightly better than expected full-year results, with sales increasing 14.5% to £156 million. So maybe we can start there, Steve. I don't suppose you could just quickly take us through what's been sort of driving that top-line growth, and also what the current demand picture is like, given all the disruption globally from the Trump trade tariffs and the wars and geopolitical events.
Well, I mean, some of that's helpful to us, of course, in a perverse way, because things like spending on defence is going up. So we're actually getting more orders related to defence, although that's not the biggest part of our business. The other thing that's really driving forward a lot of the businesses, though, is energy use. And energy use in turn, of course, as we've been hearing all hearing in the news, even this week with the US boys over here, is driven in turn by data centres and AI, because they need a lot of power. And so everybody around the world is looking at how they can either build more power stations or refurbish existing ones or make sure that everything stays in place, because that's what they need. And I mean, it's astonishing how far people are going. For example, you probably saw Microsoft are effectively buying one of the Three Mile Island nuclear power stations and resurrecting it, which is incredible. I thought they were all dead as a dodo. But so it's really surprising what people are doing. But that's what's driving a lot of our growth at the moment, and therefore that looks quite sustainable. I mean, there's always been a good long-term market for us anyway, energy, in terms of both supplying equipment into power stations for new power stations, but also spares and refurbishments and all the rest of it. That's always been a good base load of business for us, particularly at Hayward Tyler. But what we're also seeing now is other businesses starting to benefit from these trends as well. So Ormond, they are selling cooling systems into data centres for emergency cooling. In case the primary cooling goes off grid, then they have an emergency backup system. And Booth are talking to lots of different people in data centres and people making new nuclear power stations about security doors for those. So there's a lot of tailwind around that whole AI data centre power-related area. And, of course, interrelated with that is nuclear, new nuclear. And, again, we've heard a lot about that from the UK and US governments this week. Because they all want to get into small modular reactors. Of course, in the UK, we've got Rolls-Royce, but there's umpteen others, and a lot of them are in the US, who are into next-generation SMR, small modular reactors, AMRs, advanced reactors, and also fusion, for that matter, which is further out. But as you know from before, we are working with Bill Gates' outfit, TerraPower, on a large contract for them, and they're building their first demonstrator plant now. So they look like they'll be first on the bus bars of all these different people doing this. And it's great news for Hayward Tyler, because what people need is air technology, which enables them to pump either liquid metal, lithium in this case, or liquid salt as a heat transport medium, because it's more efficient than pumping water to transport the heat. So that's great for us, because most of these new designs need that sort of capability, and there's very few people who can do that, because the temperatures are very high, you know, 650, 700 degrees centigrade. So that's that whole new nuclear into data centres and AI is what is driving a lot of the tailwind for the business, and we think that's going to continue.
That's absolutely fabulous. And just in terms of the actual the regional sort of like split, I know you won some contracts in South Korea in the nuclear sector. How are you seeing the sort of Asia-Pac region developing?
Yeah, no, really well for us. I mean, KHNP in South Korea, which is the nuclear authority there, the operator there, they've been a customer for a long time for Hayward Tyler. Most years we don't get very big orders from them. It's kind of $1 million or $2, and so we don't announce it because it's just in the background. But this time, this is quite a significant order set from them, $16 million, half of which is for spares for existing equipment and half of which is new pumps for a new installation that they're doing. So they, like other countries around the world, are trying to keep all their existing nuclear power stations running, and they're also looking at building new ones. In fact, KHNP, because of their continuous good experience on nuclear, are looking at partnering with other people in other countries to help them with nuclear technology because they've got such a wealth of it in South Korea. So that's interesting for us too, because anywhere they go, they'll probably pull us along with them. The other big one that's been happening, which is not nuclear, it's just power in general, is China. And our Chinese sales have gone up significantly, particularly for Hayward Tyler, because again, the Chinese government are just building new power stations like there's no tomorrow, of all types. And that's really good news for us because, again, there are relatively few suppliers that can do what they want to do, and Hayward Tyler is well placed there. Some of this might be not so much a one-off, but there's definitely a peak going on, particularly in China, and the volume will come back down a bit again. We don't expect China to repeat what they did last year, this year, but they'll still be significantly ahead of where they were in previous years. So it's still an uplift, although there is an element of a peak demand going on there. But then in other countries, they're just getting started, and of course, all these SMR projects are all mid to longer term things that will help us in the years to come. But they don't SMRs don't make a big difference to our forecast this year, next year, except for TerraPower.
Yeah. And have you seen any disruption at all in the US from the tariffs? Or has it actually been a sort of like a bit of a tailwind? Because I know you've got local presence out there, haven't you, on the mainland?
Mostly not a problem. There's been a bit of trouble around the edges because, as you know, we regionalize our supply chain. So in the US, we have a US supply chain. We make product in the US and we sell it mainly into the US. But we also do some exporting to Canada and South America. So around the edges, there's been a bit of
Right.
trouble from tariffs, but not material to us. So we can absorb that and deal with it. So we don't. We're, and as you're saying, there's even a bit of tailwind there. Again, funnily enough, in China, because some people have pulled out of China, and some competition, if you like. And so people have come to us and said, well, we can't get that from them anymore. Can you make one of them? Yeah, sure. We can reverse engineer that and do it. So we're seeing a bit of that going on as well, actually, which is helpful to us.
Fabulous. Okay, then if we can move now to the numbers there, Stephen, can you quickly take us through the sort of highlights of the full year results? Because obviously it seemed to be a record level of turnover.
Well, yeah, Paul. I mean, I think it's all positive there, isn't it? So we did an upgrade in May, and we exceeded that profit in the full year. Our order book is very strong. It's 90% for 26, and given the two orders for HS2 and for KHNP that we recently announced, for 27 it's 50% plus, which is stronger than last year. And that still gives us 61 million, I think it is, on Sellafield, and 41 million on HS2. So that's a bit outside that time frame, but some of it will be in there. So yeah, as you say, yeah, revenue record 156, so up another 20 million. It was 20 million last year, 20 million this year, 14.5%. Of course, this has been driven by really strong growth in AES, and Steve's just talked about all those factors. So they were up 18.5 million on revenue, and sort of 14%, which is why we had to do the upgrade. Now, a lot of this growth is coming as OE rather than aftermarket. Aftermarket was a little flat in the year, if I'm honest, but it's still a high percentage of our total revenue. But because the OE has driven the results, if you like, there's a slight downtick on the gross profit percentage. But that's still 5.5 million up on last year, so another 20% sort of thing. And then that all drops down to adjusted EBITDA, which was a record at 16.7 million. So that's another 19, we'll call it 20% between friends. And AES again was 20% up year on year. Profit before tax, slightly only 18%. So I shouldn't crow about that, should we? But we had a lower tax charge because we utilized some losses, and given all the investment we're doing, we got some good R&D tax credits. So it was all positive. Just EPS follows that, and of course we've increased the dividend to 3 pence, making 4.9 for the full year. So the other side, I guess, is debt. Debt, we did better than we had originally forecast, partly because of better working cap management. Some of the contracts we got better payment terms, so that was good. We did invest though into the new products, in particular in medical. So we invested sort of 14, sorry, 13 million into the MR medical side. Some of that was losses, pre-commercial losses, but there was still a significant investment into the products for 3D X-ray and for helium-free MRI. So I'm sure you'll be talking to Steve about that. But on top of that, of course, Steve's talked about new nuclear, and that obviously does need some further investment there. And we spent about 1 million on that this year. But all, I think, in the pie model, in the middle of the pie model, as the investment. So hopefully they will all come good in due course.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, that's an excellent segue then, Steve. You could just take us through that, the medical side, the sort of the progress so far, what you see going forward, and obviously just perhaps remind the people, there obviously is investment phase as well in both the Adaptix disruptive X-rays and then the Magnetica's MRI, small form MRI scanner.
So, I mean, there's a bit of frustration for us here, actually. We're not further ahead than we are, but the teams have made a lot of progress in the last year. No two ways about it, but we'd like them to have got further than they have. But we are where we are, and the main driver of that is just the sheer complexity of the certification processes, particularly for the FDA, and particularly as we noted in the prelims and annual report, the fact that we've got so much work to do there around cybersecurity. That's driving a lot of it. And fair enough, it's quite right too. But that's what's holding us up. But nonetheless, they've made great progress. Adaptix, as you know, have already launched their veterinary product and the non-destructive testing product. They've started sales of those. They've been taking on distributors in the UK, in Europe, and America. And so that's moving forward nicely. On the orthopedic side for Adaptix, they've recently submitted an updated 510K application to the FDA for an expanded use case of the ortho product, because the first version of it wasn't good at knees particularly. It could do elbows and hands and feet quite well, but not very good at bigger knees, being a bigger joint, and couldn't do shoulders. But the new version can do both of those, so it expands the usage of the product quite a lot. So that's just going through at the moment, and again, you can never predict the time of the FDA, but we'd hope we'd get that back in fairly short order. We might be lucky, it might be in the next month, but if not the next month, it'll be the next 3 months probably. And then we're off to the races with that in the US and the EU as well. Also working on the CE mark for the EU. That might take a little while longer. But again, in fairly short order, we should be selling into orthopedic systems into the EU as well. So Adaptix is making really good headway. And then on Magnetica, similarly, they've made great headway with the product. I mean, the product's more or less done. They're still expanding out the sort of software suite, if you like. There'll be loads of work on that to do forever, effectively. But they're still working on some of the software. But all the hardware's done, all the design work's done. The product works beautifully, and people are wowed when they see the capability of the images that we're getting out of the system. So that's all great. But the frustration still is the sheer mountain of work that we've got to get through to get the FDA approval. And if you haven't, I hadn't been through this process before, neither had Steve. So we've all been learning as we go along here. Some of the teams had been through it previously, but a lot of them not. And so we're all learning as we go here. And it's just a mountain of stuff. It's quite frustrating, but we're getting there. There's no showstoppers. We're getting there, and we will get there. And then Magnetic will be off to the races as well.
And what's the sort of long-term plans for the division? Because I know you mentioned potentially in 2, 3, 4 years, once you've actually got the FDA approval and you've started commercializing it, you may possibly looking at spinning it out. What's the latest views on it?
That's still route one, if you like. That's still plan is that we probably spin them out either together or possibly separately. You're going to make an argument either way around for that, but that's certainly route one as far as we're concerned, as it becomes a spin out, separate IPO, however we do it. As we always say, we're not against the trade sale either. If somebody's that interested, then at the right point, then we consider that. But no, nobody's going to come and do a trade. A trade buyer's not going to come at the moment. It's too early still. But certainly, as I say, we're assuming that we go around an IPO route, and that, as you say, that kind of time frame, 2, 3, 4 years.
Good. And then just in terms of sort of potential M&A, particularly on the sort of disposal side, because when we spoke about 6 months ago, you mentioned there may be a few things happening in the next 12 to 18 months at that point.
Yeah, so still very much there, Paul. I mean, that you've seen from the performances of Heywood Tyler and Ormandy probably in particular suggest they may be closer to the runway than other businesses in the group. The market obviously hasn't helped us or others that much recently in terms of M&A activity. It's been a bit moribund and a bit difficult. But there's definitely signs of life now, in particular in the US, obviously, but also in Europe. So we can see it's more likely we'll make disposals in the next year than it has been. Although we can't guarantee that will happen, and obviously it depends on what the quality of the deal is. But that's more likely than not in the next 12 months, I would say. And then also, therefore, more likely than not that we'll buy some other businesses in the next 12 months as well. But it's an inexact science, all of this stuff is a bit of a black art.
Yeah.
So, we can't say with any certainty anything's going to happen, but certainly looking more likely in both directions in the next 12 months.
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of M&A on the small cap sector over the last few months. And I know one of your largest shareholders, Harwood Capital, have been active in that in terms of Spire Healthcare and also with Centaur Media and I think a few others that they've been
Yeah, and
realizing it.
they were in the loop with the sale of the engineering division of cars as well, actually. So
Yes.
they got a good price for it, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, good. Okay, brilliant. Well, let's look forward to the year ahead then, Stephen. If you could just sort of take us through the outlook. You did mention, obviously, you've got that 90% revenue cover visibility, which is fabulous. But just in terms of sort of your level of confidence and the profitability, and whether it's in line with current market expectations.
Yeah, okay. I mean, as you said, I'll repeat that 90% for 26 order book cover, and for 27, 50% plus, which is up on the prior years plus a lot of the other large contracts that I may have mentioned earlier. So, we expect AES ongoing growth. We're always cautious a little bit because engineering things happen. But we see a lot of positives in the new year. HS2, the doors will be manufacturing. We've completed all the stress tests, so that will start in the year. Booth seems to be gaining some US interest as well, so that could be quite interesting. Obviously, further expansion on the new nuclear programs into prototypes, that'd be great. Further defense work again would be a nice target. No pun intended there, of course. No, of course, and then increasing data center and AI work. I mean, we've got a lot of positive macro economic markets moving in our direction. Of course, then they got medical, which we hope to we will. I was going to say we hope to get traction in the year, certainly on the Adaptix product. And we expect their revenue to n nearly double in this next period. In particular, as I say, as you get the commercialization in the ortho area on the 3D X-ray. Of course, we'll still be unfortunately investing in on the medical side for a next generation of the 3D X-ray, which can do chest and can do bedside. 3D X-rays, which will be really helpful, i.e., the patient doesn't have to go be turfed down to the X-ray suite. You can just do it by the side, and you can immediately see. So that's a real positive. And of course, then we're going to be investing still in the software suite for the MRI and the final build. So there is some further investment, which you'll see debt go out a little bit, but still less than 1x leverage. As we expect EBITDA to increase, gearing this year was 10%. It will go up a few percentage next year, but nothing significant for a business of our size. So we have we had strong reasons to believe that it should be another good year,
Yeah.
but we're going to be a bit conservative as well with a small c.
Yeah. And would you hope to sort of win or participate in any of the sort of the size we'll see? I don't know, the big German budget, the infrastructure of about a half a trillion that's going in, plus obviously the new submarine orders, which are going into Scandinavia. And then those huge data center orders, which have just been announced when with President Trump's state visit.
Yeah, that's all good for us. And we won't get into all of it, obviously, but as the for data centers, it'll be Ormandy with cooling, it'll be Booth with security doors. For the defense side, yes, we're well entrenched with Rolls-Royce and the MOD on the submarine side, and we expect to get more business out of that. And then certainly more generally on new nuclear, as we said, we're talking to virtually every player, every Western player, I should say, who's working on next generation nuclear products. Of course, we won't end up working with all of them, but we'll end up working with we're already with TerraPower, we'll end up working with a subset of the others. All the people they mentioned this last week, Holtec, X-Energy, all those guys that they've mentioned in the last week as being potential investors in the UK, we're talking to all of them. So as I said, we might not end up working with all of them, but we're certainly in discussion with all of them. So that's all very helpful to us.
Brilliant. And then, Steve, just on the sort of last closing remarks, sort of like key messages for investors over the year ahead.
Yeah, I think more of the same. We've had a really strong year, and we see no reason why we can't have another strong year, given all the kind of macroeconomic trends in our favour and the tailwinds in our favour. So it should be more of the same. And then, as we've just been discussing, I'm really hopeful that the M&A market is getting going again, and therefore we might sort of be able to reignite a bit more pie work this year and look at some buying and selling. That'd be great.
Brilliant. Okay, well, thanks again, gents. Really fantastic results for the company, because a lot of industrial stocks, engineering businesses have been impacted, and you guys have just really sort of like, gone through it without any real major issue. In fact, you've gone from strength to strength. So really well done, guys, and look forward in touching base in about 2 or 3 months' time.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.